Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 46. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, abolitionist, author, and filmmaker, Jared Brock. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are shown in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. I'm glad you're with me today from Sioux City, Iowa. Not yet 30, Jared and spouse Michelle founded and operate a nonprofit to abolish human trafficking, also produced videos, and write books. Jared Brock is the author of A Year of Living Prayerfully and the co-founder of Hope for the Sold, an abolitionist charity that fights human trafficking one word at a time. Jared is happily married to his best friend Michelle, with whom he is the co-director and co-producer of Red Light, Green Light. Together, they have traveled to over 40 countries in 6 years of marriage and have spoken in over 100 cities around North America. Jared's writing has appeared in Huffington Post, Converge, Esquire, and Relevant magazine, and he writes regularly at jaredbrock.com. That's jaredbrock.com. A few years ago, they took the 100 Things Challenge. And today they live in a 1975 Airstream trailer in a forest in Canada. They're carbon neutral, don't own cell phones. Jared's a vegetarian who's recently completed a 37,000-mile pilgrimage around the world. He has lots of fun stories to tell. I'm so glad to be speaking today to Jared Brock, who, do you go by Jay?
Either or is fine.
And your spouse is Michelle?
You got it. Kissed her in the seventh grade.
That's wonderful. So they greeted me as fellow minimalist. So I felt right at home with that. And a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is faith-based. Obviously, Jay and Michelle are very faith-oriented people. And we're also going to be talking about how their various adventures fits in with simple living, because several of the things they are doing fit in so well, especially with a life standard number one, do justice. So, Jay, I understand that 7 years ago, you and Michelle formed an organization called Hope for the Sold, and you call yourselves an abolitionist. Tell us that story.
Yeah, well, Michelle and I were at a conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and we saw a film called Trade. It was the first kind of Hollywood film made about trafficking, and it was still a rough cut. It had the ticker tape at the bottom, and we were just so wrecked by it. Human trafficking wasn't the big buzzword that it is today, and we'd never heard of it before. My wife didn't speak for a couple of days, and I just said, we'll do something. So we came home, and we started telling everyone who would listen. We started doing coffee shops and art shows and concerts, and we started a group on this new website called The Facebook. You may have heard of it. And we just tried to reach anyone who would listen, and one thing led to another. We started Hope for the Sold, the charity, and we have made a couple of documentaries since then, and yeah, that's where it started.
Wonderful. Well, we can really identify with this because my spouse, Rita, makes jewelry, and she donates much of the profits each year to organizations that fight human trafficking.
That's awesome.
So I understand that more recently you have taken quite a trip by foot.
Yeah, well, I recently did a 37,000-mile prayer pilgrimage around the world. It wasn't on foot as much as it was by planes, trains, and automobiles. I actually have a pretty serious ankle injury. But yeah, I wrote a book about prayer, and I did a massive pilgrimage to about a dozen countries.
Wonderful. And you had some wonderful experiences learning about other cultures and other religions on this pilgrimage.
Yeah, I explored a world of prayer traditions across the Judeo-Christian prayer spectrum, including some of the weird uncles and crazy cousins. So our trip started in Brooklyn, celebrating Passover with ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews, and then I went to Jerusalem and Palestine, and then I went to Mount Athos, which is the kind of center of Greek Orthodoxy, and then on to Rome and the Vatican and Spain and France and all over the place. I went to North Korea and Westboro Baptist Church, all sorts of interesting places.
Wonderful. My wife and I have just returned from a trip to Greece and visited a number of the ruins and sites and shrines in Greece, as you did. So that's
That's
terrific.
awesome.
Now, I understand that Tyndale House has recently published a memoir about this trip.
They actually, it was really cool. They actually agreed to pay for this pilgrimage if I would write a book about it for them. So it's a humorous book on prayer. It's never been done before. The reviews have been great so far. Even people who aren't like in any way like religious or faith-based have also really enjoyed it because you kind of get a round the world kind of swashbuckling adventure as I try to figure out prayer and meet with all sorts of cool people like the Pope.
Indeed. Well, now I'll, of course, be posting links in the show notes for this podcast about your organization and your book and your film. Tell us a little bit about your film, Red Light, Green Light.
Yeah, so Red Light, Green Light came out of, so I'm based here in Canada, about 6 months a year we're here, and the Supreme Court struck down the laws in Canada regarding prostitution. And we had done a lot of research about prostitution and found that when countries don't have laws about prostitution, they actually have increased human trafficking because pimps and traffickers can make so much money by selling predominantly women. So we traveled to 10 countries to shoot a documentary about prostitution, looking at different models around the world. So we interviewed the head of anti-trafficking in places like the Netherlands and Sweden and Switzerland, and we went to Hungary and France and England and all over the states in Canada. And so Red Light, Green Light was the result of that. We toured it to 96 cities around North America, and we actually were invited to testify in Parliament, which is kind of like congressional committee down in the states. And we were able to be part of getting a law put in place that actually helps women get out of prostitution if they want to, and then at the same time criminalizing the purchase of sex because this is a supply and demand issue. And so we're very happy with the results. And redlightgreenlightfilm.com, people can watch the trailer right there.
Very good. I noticed that you have showings around the country and you invite people to have showings in their hometowns.
Yeah, so we've done 96 live screenings, but we send out screening packages on a very regular basis. People do screenings with us all over the place in churches, universities, rape crisis centers, aftercare facilities, safe houses, schools. Our documentaries have been seen in hundreds of high schools, and our first documentary actually was used to train over 200 Border Service officers. So they've had a great impact, considering it's just my wife and I and our computers. We try to keep it simple.
Indeed. Well, now, what's interesting to me is this combination of the prayerful life and the social action. And do you see those as pretty much reinforcing each other, or are they separate parts of your life?
Yeah, I really do think, Jerry, that they are, you can't have one without the other. I visited an incredible, massive monastery in Italy called Monte Cassino. It was built by Saint Benedict, who is kind of the father of modern monasticism. So all the, monks and nuns today, they kind of their influence comes from this guy named Benedict of Nursia. And his famous quote was, "Ora et labora," pray and work. The idea is that you cannot separate one from the other. It would sort of be like in your marriage, if you just talked the whole time and never did anything, your marriage would fall apart. But if you just did stuff the whole time and never talked, it would also fall apart. So I think social action and prayer, meditation, talking to God are very integral.
Now, I noticed in your on your websites that there's a number of what I would seem to be what appear to be blogs, and they're written by Michelle. So it seems to me you have an interesting division of labor between the two of you as a team.
So Michelle does all the blogging on hopeforthesoul.com. I do all the blogging on livingprayerfully.com. When it comes to film, she goes into film projects kicking and screaming. So I kind of take the realm for doing that, writing, directing, producing. She's also a film editor now, so she's very good at that, and she has an excellent photographic eye. So I kind of get. I kind of prod her in the direction of making films, and then we do those together. But yeah, she's also a fantastic writer, and she's had lots of practice, which is pretty good considering English is her second language. She was actually born in Kenya and raised in Ethiopia. And so she writes pretty good in English, all things considered.
Indeed. Well, it's interesting that you're also a minimalist. So you take
Yes.
simple living very seriously. I empathize with you because in our practice of voluntary simplicity, we also need to use planes occasionally. And how are other ways that you integrate simple living or minimalism in with your activism?
So we take minimalism very seriously. We decided a number of years ago that we weren't going to be able to live the American dream and pursue the dream and the calling that we really felt, the path we were supposed to be on. So we simplified drastically. We took the 100 things challenge at one point, and we got down to 88 combined items for a 5-month trip through Central America. And when we returned, we just did a complete life makeover. So we actually live in a 1975 Airstream trailer, one of those silver bullet kind of trailers. We mostly buy used clothes. We only buy used electronics. We don't own cell phones. We don't own a TV or a microwave. I'm a vegetarian. And then we've cut our consumption drastically, and then we actually use carbon offsets to deal with things like flying. So we are carbon neutral with offsetting. So we've tried to create a margin of time and money in order to focus on projects that we feel called to do. I believe that minimalism is a tool, and it's not, it's not the be all end all. It's a tool to accomplish great things in this world because you're just living so simply.
I understand the trailer is in a forest.
Yeah, we are in a trailer park in kind of a nice tucked away back corner, completely surrounded by trees, and we have a picnic table, and we've got a little campfire area. It's really great, and it's incredibly affordable. To give you an idea in real numbers, Jerry, we're based in Canada about 6 months a year, and our total bills, like land rent, heat, hydro, Wi-Fi, water, are around $500 a month. So then the other 6 months, we're on the road. We try to avoid Canadian winters and do our projects during the winter. But that's just allowed us to not need two full-time incomes to pay all these bills. We can be very lean and mean and flexible, and we can get on the road in a moment's notice. It takes 2 minutes to clean our whole house and 5 minutes to pack for a month-long trip. So it's been very helpful for keeping us agile.
Smart, smart indeed. Okay, now Jared, give us an idea of what's on the horizon. Can you,
Oh man. Yeah, that's a good question. I spent a year on this on the road, writing this like a year on the road doing this book, like A Year of Living Prayerfully, and then it took a year to write and edit it. And so I've got 2 years into this book project, so I think I need to steward it and kind of share it and get it out there. My wife and I actually started a second nonprofit that owns the book, so all my author royalties from the book are going to be donated to charity. And what's really cool is that my publisher is a nonprofit as well, so all their profits are going to charity as well. So we really hope that the book helps people to laugh and learn about prayer and other cultures, but also that we can do a lot of good in the world. So that's going to be my next year. We're already looking ahead to next winter and where we will be stationed. And we suspect that we're looking at Germany. It's pretty accessible to get to most of Western Europe from Berlin. So we might be in Europe for the 6 months over winter this year. So we'll see. Potentially launching a podcast about human trafficking. I've started to fundraise for our next documentary. And of course, I'm always working on my next book.
Well, do you use crowdsourcing for fundraising, or do you have foundations or publishers primarily?
Well, for Red Light, Green Light, it was actually mostly blog donors, like blog readers who donated, friends and family. Grants, no one wanted to touch the prostitution issue when it comes to grants. So that was a bust on that area. But yeah, so crowdfunding in a way, like, I mean, we haven't used Kickstarter or Indiegogo, but we've definitely, it's been blog readers that have made these projects happen and continue to make them happen. Like, it's because of the generosity of people that we're able to do these projects. And what we're so happy to be able to say very proudly is that, if you donate to Hope for the Sold, it's going to be some of the best dollars you can spend to fight human trafficking. There's only one person on staff, that's my wife, and yet we have such an outsized influence, and that is due to intentional simplicity regarding how we run our charity.
Indeed. Well, just to get even a clearer picture of what's happening, are there times when you and Michelle take regular salary paying jobs?
Not at this point, no. We basically, like, from a very practical standpoint, we live off of Michelle's salary with Hope for the Sold, and it's like far below the Canadian average salary. But we just don't need that much, so we're very happy just living on that. And then I donate all my book royalties, and yeah, so like that's all we need for now. So we're just going to keep doing that, and we'll see. Like, I mean, obviously, if we adopt a bunch of kids who are at risk of sex trafficking, then of course our bills will go up, and we'll probably need to be a little more permanent. But at the moment, we're giving birth to a whole bunch of documentaries and books, so we shall see.
So, are you telling me that there is this need or this feeling that you may be adopting children in the future?
Yeah, like, I mean, for me personally, I don't think I would personally want to have more than two kids, because I do think that overpopulation is a silent killing issue that's going to creep up on us and take us all by surprise. That's of course just a personal opinion, and some of my best friends have many, many more kids than that, and I love them all dearly. But the other thing, of course, is there's so much need in the world. There's over 200 million orphans worldwide. Millions of children are trafficked for sex every year. And countries like Moldova, where 1 in 4 girls will be trafficked, I just think that's intolerable. And if I was one of those kids, I would be praying for help. And so, therefore, the golden rule dictates that I have to help others as I would want them to help me. So, yeah, we definitely think that adoption on a large scale is in our future, as funds allow. So we shall see.
Well, I find that very commendable. My wife and I have a feeling that, if a family has more than two children, they are in effect overpopulating the earth. So
Indeed.
we're in strong agreement with you there. We also have two grandchildren and plan to have no more. So, are you encouraging other people to adopt? Is this part of the Hope for the Sold is to encourage other people to adopt?
On a small level, it is one of the things that's on our abolitionist checklist, to either mentor, foster, or adopt someone who would be at risk of sex trafficking. Obviously, if there's poverty, there's always elevated risk. Minorities, First Nation, Aboriginal Indians are always at risk. So it's certainly something that we advocate for. It isn't huge for us at the moment, simply because we don't have the foundation to stand on in that we haven't done it ourselves. I suspect, Jerry, that as we do adopt, that will become a far greater something that we encourage others to do for sure.
One thing that's interesting to me, Jared, is that there's so much trafficking going on in the United States. I mean, we live in a beautiful area on Central Coast, California, most of the year, my hometown. And we're finding that in San Luis Obispo County, there's a lot of trafficking going on, and it's just completely hidden. And so are you planning on doing more work in North America on this issue?
Yeah, certainly. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. The key issue here is that where there are men willing to pay for sex, pimps and traffickers will take it upon themselves to bring in supply. So for me, this is a supply and demand issue at its core. If no one was paying for sex, no one would be trafficked for sex. Therefore, we need to end demand for paid sex by whatever means necessary. And I think step number one is criminalizing people who purchase sex. So the Johns need to have some sort of re-education on what prostitution is, the risks, the health risks associated with it for them and their families, and what these girls are on average going through. The average girl who's in prostitution in America was trafficked at age 14. So even though some of them are over 18 now and they say it's their choice, choice is a very kind of murky water when it started as a trafficking case. So yeah, it's a big and complicated issue, but we try to really unpack it in red light, green light. It's proven very helpful for the tens of thousands of people who've seen it so far.
Now, are you working on the political side of this, or are you working with other organizations that are working with the political side to get similar laws in the US like you now have in Canada?
At this point, no. We know kind of all the abolitionists in Canada at this point, and we've started to make inroads into the States, but that's definitely a growing edge for us, something that we would love to get into more. Obviously, the political monster slash machine that is the American politics scene is just on a scale that the world has never seen, and certainly is far bigger than Canada. Obviously, you have 10 times the population, so it's 10 times as complicated. But that's something that we would love to partner with a political champion in the States in the future. It's interesting because, politicians, they're all for rescuing kids from trafficking, and they're all for busting pimps. But no one is talking about the Johns, because they're a pretty major voting bloc. Many men in the States have purchased sex, and so until we start talking about ending demand for paid sex, we're kind of just scooping water out of a sink with the tap running full blast.
Well, anything else that you would like to share as we wrap up this conversation?
Going back to the book for a minute, we really haven't dug into it, but it was a story that was actually birthed out of filming undercover in the red light district of Amsterdam. There was hundreds of drunk guys roaming the streets, women in the windows, police on horseback. The din was totally crazy. And in the middle of the district is the oldest building in Amsterdam. It's an 800-year-old church, still active. And the church bells were ringing, and men are abusing women to the soundtrack of church bells. And I just stood in the middle of that, and I was completely overwhelmed. And I just said, God, I need your power and prayer to end this. And that started me on this journey that ended up leading to all sorts of places, like refusing to bow to the dead bodies of the leaders in North Korea, and being granted an audience with Pope Francis, and having lunch at the Vatican, and dancing with rabbis in Brooklyn, and hanging out in Palestine, and all sorts of interesting places. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage people to check out Red Light, Green Light, as well as A Year of Living Prayerfully. I think one will be very enlightening for you, and I think the other will be very entertaining for you.
Well, just so everyone understands, the name of the organization is Hope for the Sold. That's SOLD, sold, not Hope for the Soul.
Yeah.
And the book, A Year of Living Prayerfully, it's available in print. Is it also available electronically?
Yeah, if you actually go to livingprayerfully.com, you can download the first two chapters totally for free. You can watch the book trailer there, and that has links to everywhere you can buy it. You can get it in hardcover, in digital, ebook, you know, Kobo, Kindle, the whole nine yards, as well as audiobook. I sing in it. I have about a dozen different accents. It's quite fun. So that's available as well.
Oh, it sounds like be entertaining as well as enlightening. It sounds like you're sort of living from year to year. And I'm trying to get the long view here. I mean, this sounds like a life goal. This sounds like a life mission. Is that accurate, or are you just taking it year by year?
Look, I mean, I think it's on one hand, you want to plan ahead. But on the other hand, it's so foolish to think that we humans are in control of our life and destiny and can map out our 50-year plan. So I am always wrestling with that tension. But I think I know my long-term dream and goal is to continue to tell stories that encourage people, that lead people closer to God and each other. So, and then of course, give away the profits, because I just don't need that much to live on. But so whether that's speaking, writing, or film, that's what I want to spend my life doing, is just telling stories and then giving the profits of that to people in great need.
That's very touching. Thank you, Jared. You've been listening to my conversation with abolitionist, author, and filmmaker Jared Brock. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Well, in response to my podcast, Living Simply and Loving It, I received encouragement from Charlie Kyle in Chicago. Thanks, Gerald. You really walked the walk. Thank you, Charlie. In an episode soon, I have scheduled an interview with Janet Lewers of SimpleLiving.com, an author of the popular The Simple Living Guide and of Simple Loving. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all of our episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview Backup and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. We'd love to get to know you as a subscriber to this podcast and to our weekly blogs. Subscriptions are free and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, at iTunes. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our services and resources are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive our free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. So others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need need their own rooms, lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.